Welcome to Milkmaids Podcast, the unconventional homesteading podcast. I'm Stephanie from Wyoming.
And I'm Tara from Montana. Join us each week as we take a deep dive into an inclusive homesteading topic from canning, dairy animals, gardening, animal husbandry, and everything in between.
Hey, Tara.
Hello.
How's it going?
Great. It's going great.
Great.
Well, it is sunny out today. It's been so nice out. I can't really complain about that.
I went out today in like my normal winter clothes and I was out there for maybe 15 minutes and was sweating.
Yeah. Yeah. It's at that point. Well, too, your body adjusts. Sweating. Too.
And it's probably like low to mid 20s.
Right. Right. But at the end of winter, yes. Your body adjusts. So you're like, okay.
Yeah.
It's 15 degrees and I'm wearing a sweater. Right. So,
right.
Yeah, yep. It's fun. And then 70 degrees feels like 100 degrees when it finally comes.
I can't even imagine 70 degrees right now.
We'll get it next month.
Sounds awful.
Sure. Right. Terrible.
You will next month?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because it's
we already, don't hit 70 until like middle or end of June.
It's already reached 60 degrees here in February. We're lucky, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, part of that sounds nice. Part of that sounds miserable.
Right,
so.
Right.
Gosh. All right. Well, we're not here to talk about the weather. Well, who are we shouting out today?
This year, I have really made it a goal for myself and my family to order seeds from small independent seed producers. And we have done a lot of phenomenal seed seller shout outs here. And today, that is no different. This week, we are shouting out Backyard Garden Seeds from Olive Branch, Mississippi. Backyard Garden Seeds was started by Princess Cole, and her business started incredibly organically by the way of her blog, where she started selling seeds that she had extras of just to like get rid of them and make a couple dollars extra cash. But she wanted to separate the two so that her seeds could really shine on a better platform. So her website she started in order to provide that is called backyardgardenseeds.com, and it really took off more than she had ever expected. So the reason for the name is due to the fact that all the plants she grows are in her backyard. Princess says that her backyard is just so accessible and easy for her to get to. And I really think this is so encouraging when people start keeping seeds in a backyard or a container setting and selling those, because it is showing you that you can really garden anywhere.
Yeah, we say that all the time. And I love examples like that because neither you or I, we have big spaces.
Yeah.
But it is so important to know that you don't have to. And that's awesome. Not only is she growing her own food, but has a business out of it. It's incredible.
Right. Some of the seeds come from her children's grandmother, and she is able to harvest those seeds and sell those as well. So nothing is wasted here. On top of all of this, she does provide a blog that really goes into depth on many garden-related things. So, for example, one was on composting, and it's really well written and helps someone who's new to gardening understand that topic of composting and get a grasp on composting so that they can start right away, which I know for you and I, if we can just grasp something like that easily and quickly, it makes it a lot more accessible.
Totally.
And some seeds that really caught my eye are like the loofah gourds, because I really want to try that. You can dry it, cut it up, and then put soap around it.
I have a package of loofah seeds here. I should just give them to you because they're like 110 days or something.
Yeah.
I mean, like easily double what I can grow, but they're just so fascinating. I want to do them so badly.
Right. Yeah. And you do have to start them inside in certain areas. And I think for me, I would have to do that, which is fine. This is something new for me growing this summer, though, if I did do those. And I'm just excited to find seeds like that you probably couldn't find anywhere else. And she also offers beans, brassicas, corn, eggplants, flowers, herbs, and many, many more seeds. So if you're looking for quality seeds, definitely check out her shop. And she also has the cutest shirt available in her gift shop. And on the Backyard Garden Seed website, she offers a shirt that says Soil Sister with a little sprout under it.
That's adorable.
Yeah, it just goes to show how important this community she has made is to her. And I just can't wait to get seeds from her.
Yeah, that's awesome. She's really doing it. And I just love the example she's setting for all of us in the homesteading world.
Yes.
So, awesome. Well, yeah, definitely check her out. If you want to reach out to us, send us an email at milkmaidspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us at Facebook or Instagram at Milkmaids Podcast.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
Subscribe, exactly. Yes. That part that I always forget to say, even though it's written in front of my face.
So, do you have any farm updates?
No. Well, no. My baby is still here.
Right. So you've been inside.
He's right here.
Right.
If you hear him, that's why. We're just all collectively going to have to deal with this for a while.
Yes.
So the audio quality might be a little weird on my end. It's his fault. You guys write him an email.
Right. A strongly worded email.
Don't do that. I will come after you.
Nobody will.
Gosh. Anyways, that's all. He was like groaning through the whole shout out. I'm like, I should just tell people what that is.
Oh, it's okay.
My on the farm is literally nothing. I had like a healing setback in my post-pregnancy, post-birthing situation. So I did nothing all week. I didn't even do the inside kitchen stuff. Obviously, Brian's been doing all of the chores for us. The milk cow is still doing fantastic on the once a day milking, Virgie. And what else? I decided to sell some goats. That's really all I've done.
Yeah.
Farm related. We started the onion seeds 2 weeks ago, I think. They're coming up now.
Oh, that's exciting.
So that's it. Like this is what I'm living for over here.
Yes.
The thrill of it all. But you have a ton of farm updates.
Yeah. So Matilda had pigs on like the coldest night ever. It was so cold. It was below zero, which is kind of unusual in February, but that's usually how it happens. So she did lose two and then she did roll on one. So we only have five now because she had eight. Right. So.
But were the two like viable or were they?
Yeah.
Stillborn?
It looked
or
like
do
they
not know.
It looked like both of them had no slippers. So it looks like they were maybe working on. They just got in a weird spot. It was like everything lined up to be not great. Mm-hmm. It just sometimes happens. And I could have got up, but I just never did. I think one of the kids came to bed with me that night. So, like, how do you get up without waking up a toddler? So.
And no one does that.
No one.
Do not dare wake up the toddler.
Yeah. So she has five, but they're doing great right now. They're huge and they're only a week and a half old. And then Moira had surprise piglets yesterday. I thought she had another week because she was not acting like she was going to have babies ever, like anywhere close, because she didn't nest. She didn't do the normal pig things. It was just like surprise. I went out there and there was eight piglets. I had to throw a bunch of straw in there because I didn't really have a lot. They don't need a lot. And it was like a warm day. So it actually worked out really well. But then I went out there like just before we recorded and she has another one. So nine.
And
a day later. And I don't know what's going on because I saw her deliver one placenta and I thought two, but clearly pigs have two horns. So that means that they have two places where piglets are connected. So one placenta and then another placenta. And I think what happened, because that piglet's alive, it's doing good. So I think that other placenta is still in there. I'm just going to have to leave her because she's being really cranky and it's not worth me getting hurt because she's so cranky. So whatever happens, happens, I guess.
Right. And just to clarify, if you have an animal with a retained placenta, you need to be considering drugs to make her push that out and then antibiotics. But you do with pigs, you have to, well, with any animal, really, you have to figure out what's safe and what's not safe. And in this case, you just have to roll the dice on it.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like she's up eating, drinking, no fever, because if she were, she would be not eating or drinking.
Right. Well, and she'd probably feel puny enough that you could treat her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I can't. So that's a good sign. Like, I'm happy that she's fighting me off, whatever.
Right.
And I don't think it's retained at this point. I just think that it was delayed labor for some reason. And it could have been because I saw that one placenta and I assumed she was done.
Mm-hmm.
So when I threw straw in there or whatever, she got all upset and just held back. So I'll update you when I know more, but right now I don't know anything.
It's the weirdest.
It's so, everything weird has to happen to me.
We have no explanation for the situation.
No, none. Zero. So that's all that I have.
I do need to know though.
Yeah.
How are your frogs?
Excellent. Okay, good. They're good. I just checked on them right before I recorded. Frog update.
Good. Frog update. Yeah. Perfect. We haven't talked about them in a very long time.
No, we haven't. That's true. So what are we talking about today?
This episode might get real expensive for me. We are talking about livestock guardian dogs.
Yes, we are.
So yeah, have you ever had a livestock guardian dog?
No, I have not.
So I have had a dog that was the breed of a livestock guardian dog, but I've never had a livestock guardian dog that was a guardian to the livestock, if that makes any sense.
Right, right. It was a pet.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So I have a very specific set of reasons why I don't have one. You have a set of reasons as well.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, we'll kind of go into that a little bit too, but we know several people who have, between the two of us, know several people who have them and love them. So anyhow, they are anywhere between an integral part of a farming operation to a novelty item of a small farm. So, and they're just a super fun thing to talk about.
Right.
So we are doing one. So a livestock guardian dog, we have them or we consider having them because predation is problematic throughout the entire world. It doesn't matter where you live, you're going to have some form of predation depending on what animals you have. So anytime we're charged with tending to these animals that are lower on the food chain, we have to manage that to some degree. So what I learned through researching this is that the USDA actually has a program with the Wildlife Service Department called the Predation Management Program. Have you ever heard of this?
I have not.
Yeah, I didn't. And then I ended up like reading every page on their website and every PDF. I'm like, what is wrong with me?
Rabbit holes I just be all like, over the place.
Okay, so that's a thing. Yeah. But anyhow, it's kind of cool. There's a lot of resources on their website as far as just like general information on predation and methods to deter predators. And I guess they also offer services where they will like work with you as a producer on an individual level and like go to your farm and assess things and offer you specific help on how to limit encounters and limit losses. So I thought that was really interesting. I didn't even know that that was a thing. So why do they do that, right? So on their website, they provide a very black and white reason as to why they care. Money, obviously.
Yep.
Obviously. Apparently, there was a study done by NASS showing that for every dollar spent in predation management, $3 worth of livestock was saved. And I would just love to know what that looked like exactly, but how they studied that. But the study was done in 1998. So obviously our numbers today would be a lot different, a lot more, spoiler alert. But it's estimated that an overall recovery of $250 million in increased economic activity due to livestock from spending a total of $20 million in predation management.
Geez.
I feel like that was worded wrong. So they spent $20 million, they got $250 million back, essentially, on a nationwide level, which was, that's insane.
Yeah.
And now this is all forms of predation management, but livestock guardian dogs are recommended on their website. If you sign up to be working with them on an individual level, they'll work with you to find a breeder and help you do the training and all of that stuff, get you the resources you need. So
that's amazing.
Anyways, the livestock guardian dog component of our national program, that was pretty cool to discover, I thought.
Livestock guardian dogs, or LGDs, as you'll see them commonly referred to if you're in forums or just talking to someone, they'll usually say LGD. They're dogs that are used to protect livestock, most commonly sheep and goats. So they started out protecting sheep and goats. Most often, they are very large dogs, around 80 to 120 pounds, and most commonly white or fawn colored. And unlike herding dogs, which is what I have a heeler, they do not chase livestock. Instead, they work independently of humans to stay close to the herd and watch for predators. And frequently, their presence is enough to repel a predator, but they will also use force if required. There are many benefits to utilizing a LGD. Number one is reducing predation on livestock. Number two, reducing potential for wildlife to transmit diseases to livestock. And this varies like where you live.
The risk associated. Yeah, for sure. But that was something that had never crossed my mind as a reason to have a livestock guardian dog, but it absolutely makes sense.
Cow. Right. Like elk and wild sheep. That's an issue here is like wild sheep getting a disease from domesticated sheep or giving them a disease.
And like brucellosis between cows. I know we're talking about cows, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And elk and deer herds, were what? Yes.
Chronic wasting disease
mutated into some form of, but that's how we have the scrapies in goat and sheep.
Yep.
Yeah.
So these are all considerations that a lot of people might want to take. And then reducing labor. So lessening the need for a night corral or putting your animals up in a barn at night. And then alerting the owners to disturbance in the flock. And if you've ever seen videos of them working, it's really neat how they do that. Protecting the family and the ranch property. And this, again, is something that might vary from place to place or family to family. And then allowing for more efficient uses of pastures and potential expansion of livestock. So both genetics and proper rearing are required to produce a great guardian dog. Training and raising methods are very important in developing an LGD too. Some information out there suggests that 3 in 4 dogs make it to be successful guardians, and failure rates are most commonly correlated with improper training. So it's very important that you do train these dogs properly. Here's some recommendations from the USDA Wildlife Services page. You want to select a suitable breed and you want to purchase from a reputable breeder. So from 8 weeks old, you want to rear the puppies singly with sheep, minimizing human contact, and then monitor the dog and correct undesirable behaviors. You want to encourage the dog to remain with or near the livestock, and then ensure the dog's health and safety, of course. Manage the livestock in accordance with the dog's age and experience. So you wouldn't want to just leave 500 Cornish cross chickens out with a 8-week-old puppy, right?
Yeah, don't do that.
Right. also their experience, the livestock dog's experience does play a part in this as well. So be patient and allow plenty of time to train your dog. Remember, they're still puppies for quite a long time. They don't just grow out of those puppy stages as fast as you need them to.
Yes.
You just got to be patient. And remember that a LGD may take 2 years or more to mature. They are bigger dogs.
Yeah, and yes. I was kind of surprised, and maybe we'll talk about this through the episode, but I was kind of surprised that a lot of them live to 10 to 12 years for as big as they are. So 2 years to become a puppy or to mature is acceptable, I think.
Yeah. And then they're less likely to be inbred because they're not trying to make show lines. They're actually trying to make working dogs.
Right.
That has a lot to do with why they're living so long as being a larger dog.
Right. So yeah, those bullet points that we just went over for training, please do more research than that. That was just to tell you guys that you can't just wing it here. You really do need to put in some time and effort into the training, because that's more than people think. And that's where the failure comes in, is that people are like, oh, I'll just keep it in my house while it's cute and fluffy, and then kick it out and surprised why it just sits on your porch and cries. You know, so anyways.
Right.
But now the fun part is we're going to go into some of our favorite breeds. So first up is Akbash. These dogs are native to the plains and mountains of Turkey. And while they're fairly familiar or similar to other Mediterranean guard breeds, they do have unique characteristics that are a result of mixing mastiffs and gaze hounds, so that they're both strong and visual. And gaze hound is something that I came across in this research, but it's also called a sight hound.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
I don't know who calls it gaze hound, but I left it in there because I was like, well, that's really cool.
That is really cool.
So in Turkey, these dogs were used to protect sheep from all predators. Wolves were the most prominent in the area, though. And they first made their appearance in the U.S. beginning in 1970, when a couple named David and Judy Nelson took interest of them, importing over 40 dogs. So directly from the UKC standard here. So UKC, for those who don't know, there's two main kennel clubs in the United States. The American Kennel Club, AKC, is what most people know about. UKC is the United Kennel Club, and they're the second on the ladder as far as what people typically think of when it comes to dog registries. But UKC tends to be more accepting of the less common breeds, whereas AKC has they have to be longer standing or more rigorous rules as to who gets in and who doesn't.
Oh, okay.
So the UKC standard, then, Akbashes are registered with UKC but not AKC. So they say... which I just thought this was a cool way to describe a dog. The white Akbash dog is a long-legged, lean, muscular dog of imposing size and strength, great courage, and stamina, with an alert, regal bearing.
That's a nice Tinder account.
I know. We don't do a lot of quotes, direct quotes, when we do our research, but I thought that was just really interesting. The regal bearing.
Yeah, you had to put it in.
So as mentioned, the kind of unique part about these dogs is they must maintain characteristics of the sighthound as well as the mastiff. So the sighthound offers them long legs, a deep chest, speed, and agility. And a sighthound, a greyhound is a sighthound. That would probably be the most common example.
Yeah, that's why when they used to run the dogs on tracks, dog tracks, they had a fake bunny that went on there because they were attracted to the sight of the bunny.
As opposed to a basset hound, exactly.
Smell, they're not tracking.
Yeah, those dogs hunt with their eyes. And then a mastiff contributes height, weight, and overall impression of power. And you guys know what mastiffs are. They're big, burly dudes, right? So these qualities aren't only pretty, but they are just really useful in application when you think of what this dog is trying to accomplish. So the mastiff qualities make them tough and strong enough to be visually imposing to a predator, but then they can also walk the walk if the physical altercation were to occur. And then the sighthound qualities make them fast, which is important to chasing off predators, but it also contributes a component of being visual, which is important for what a livestock guardian dog is to do. They are to watch. So these dogs tend to have steady temperaments and are capable of making decisions on their own in changing situations, but they're still guardian dogs, so they will still be wary of those not in their charge. We do have a link to the Akbash Dog Association of America if you'd like to learn more about them. They're really kind of cool.
Okay, so the next one, this is one that's actually pretty popular, but the name is hard to say, so please forgive me. Write me a hate mail, not Stephanie. The Marimano Abruzzese Sheepdog, and commonly just referred to as the Marimano. So this is one of the dogs most pictured when you're thinking of an LGD. And that's for a good reason, right? I think of this.
Well, it's funny because so how Tara and I do these breed episodes, because we think it's the most fun, is that we pick collectively six or so breeds, right? And then you take three, I take three. And then neither one of us read each other's shit because then we get to do this
we want to be surprised
and be entertained
while
we're doing it. But I used almost word for word that exact same line that you just said. The dogs that you picture of, or that you picture when thinking of an LGBT on a different breed. So maybe.
Yes, we'll see. They do look
classic.
I know which one you're talking about. So they look similar. Like I said, they're commonly also referred to as a Marama. And this is an LGD from central Italy specifically. And listen to this, the Abruzzo to Marama region of Tuscany. Then that gave the dog its name. So it's specific to the area. And it translates to shepherd dog of the Marama and Abruzzo. I'm going to say it different every time.
That's okay. You're welcome. You're going to hit it right one at a time.
Expanding it, right?
Right.
The original use was to protect herds of sheep from wolves again, and they did an excellent job of it. There's quite a bit of art depicting these dogs from Roman times to the present day, including sculptures and paintings of the beautiful dogs. These sculptures are made from marble, and they are carved like so intricately, I can't even with them. They're so beautiful. And if you search for any of these pieces of art, some that will stand out are the ones where the dog is depicted in or near the nativity scene. That's how common they were. And they were so commonplace that typically if you thought of shepherds, you'd see these dogs right next to them in paintings. They were classified into the Italian Kennel Club in 1898, which sounds so fancy.
Italian Kennel Club?
Yeah, Italian Kennel Club.
We're so American.
But it wasn't until the early 1950s before they started to really combine the two types. So there were two types going on. The ones were from Marama and then the ones that were in Abruzzo, and then they combined the two types to make one central type of dog. These dogs are known for being very muscular with incredibly thick white hair, and it's very long. Their nose is almost always black, and frequently their presence is enough to repel a predator, but they will also use force if required. So if they are pushed hard enough, they will fight back. Their height can vary from 24 to 29 inches tall, and they weigh anywhere from 66 to 115 pounds. So they are a little bit lighter than some other dogs. And if you have neighbors and you're worried about the constant barking at night from an LGD, which is a common complaint about them, these ones like bark the less though.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they're typically barkers, but these ones do not bark as much. They're more of like an alert bark. So they'll bark to alert you instead of barking the entire night.
Right.
Because they're bred to guard and protect, but they're still said to do less than other breeds while still offering excellent protection. They are just kind of more of a chill dog.
Yeah, no, that's awesome to know because that is a big problem with livestock guardian dogs.
Yeah, yeah. And people will think that, oh, I have 4 acres, but I have a lot of goats and there's coyotes here. So I'm going to go ahead and get 5 of these dogs.
Right.
Well, they're going to bark all night and your neighbors are going to hate you.
So. Yeah.
Maramas are good for that. They're not as much of a barker. And they're also said to be the type of LGD that does work better with a pack. And if you have a large amount of land and a lot of predator pressure, they might be better for you. They're better suited for your land. They're also an excellent choice if you live somewhere that is cold or you have a lot of defensive plant species because their fur is so thick.
So the next breed is a Great Pyrenees, which is also the one that you're going to think of when you close your eyes and think of a livestock guardian dog.
Yeah, yeah.
The most classic, except for the other one that's the most classic. So this breed is absolutely ancient, which I found, I got on a rabbit hole on this one too.
I'm sure.
I mean, it's just like the craziest thing. So they're thought to have originated as far back as 10 to 11,000 years ago. So old that fossils have been identified of them.
Wow.
Which is fascinating. Yeah. So originating in Asia Minor, they eventually made their way to the Pyrenees Mountains, which are near the border of Spain and France. Again, why they have their name. And they have a bunch of different names based on what country you're in, but we call them Great Pyrenees here.
I love that whole side note.
Yeah.
Cows are the same way. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just name them Jersey after the place that they're from. Right. They're never Steve. It's not Steve breeds.
No.
It's named after the location. So that's interesting.
I had a British friend. This is such a tangent. Speaking of cow names, I had a British friend that she used to work on our horses, and she's like, she's the funniest, but she got going on this like complete, like almost yelling tangent about how insane Americans are for thinking that they can just call them Hereford cows. Why would they call them Hereford cows? Don't you think the English would know that they're called Hereford? However, she said it all cute, but she was like yelling about this situation. So yeah, anyways.
That's hilarious.
Know about your cow names. So anyhow, tangent. These dogs I have a wildly varied history, which is where all of my research came into play. But I did not include it here because, again, that could be a whole episode. But if you're interested in them, look them up because there's like books written about these dogs' history. Wow. But obviously, they were livestock guardian dogs. They were also beasts of the French royalty, and they were set to guard castles.
Nice.
They contributed to creating the Newfoundland dog. They saved the St. Bernard breed, the whole thing. And they were used as military dogs in World War I and World War II. And there's a whole other list of things that these dogs have been used for. But they found their way to the United States in 1931 via importation by Mr. and Mrs. Francis V. Crane. AKC accepted them as a breed, though, in 1933.
Well, it didn't take very long for that because usually if they're imported, it takes like 20 plus years. But these ones, it was only 2 years.
Well, I think just because they had such a history compared to other breeds that it was really easy to prove who they were and what they were about.
Yeah.
So these dogs are different from a lot of livestock guardian dogs in their history as well as their current standing, that they're just fantastic at both guarding and family companions. And they truly are a working dog as opposed to just a livestock dog. They've done literally every job that there is to do. So if you are thinking of, well, I may use it for this or I may use it for that or whatever, they're just they're a more compatible dog when it comes to variability, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But they are probably what most people envision when they think of the livestock guardian dog. But here's the thing. They kind of all look very similar, except for a few standouts, which is big, white, fluffy, dark muzzle. Why do they look like that? So they look like they're sheep. They blend in with their sheep. They are part of the sheep.
They do that so they don't scare the sheep. Right. It's not so that they are tricking the predators.
Yes.
Because they do want to stand out to the predators. And more often than not, the predators can smell them.
Yes.
It's so they don't spook the animals that they're guarding.
Yeah. So the sheep accept them.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's why most of these dogs look very similar. So.
Yes.
They're huge. So they stand 32 inches tall at the shoulders, weighing in at 100 pounds or more. But they're really double that size because they do have this big floofy coat. They just look impressively big to me. They're generally white, but sometimes they can have some markings too, like colored markings. While they were bred to work bears and wolves, they are effective against all sorts of predators. And this is actually the breed of dog that we had. And we actually had it when we lived there in Montana, Tara. I don't know if you ever met him or not. His name was Max. Our property that we lived on had like the little house up at the front. And then I don't know how many acres it was. It wasn't a massive property, but there was a forested section behind the house. And then after you got through the forested section, there was this big meadow section. Yep. And then it just went straight up the mountain from there. And as kids, so I moved there when I was 9 and left when I was 14. And then I had 4 siblings underneath of me, 3 of which were around at that point in time that were like, younger than me anyhow. I was significantly older than them. But all 4 of us, my 3 siblings and myself, would go out into that back meadow. We just thought it was like the coolest place to go. And frequently go back there and be like, oh, cool, deer bones. And like be all over it. Like it was, but it wasn't there the day before, right?
Yeah.
Which should have been an alert that like there was a predator hanging out in that area.
No.
Us kids, no. I mean, just like, oh, cool. We were all over
deer bones. Yeah.
Deer bones. Yeah. Like, we stayed the night out there under a tarp.
Of course.
Like, I mean, we just, parents, where were they? Who knows? So the point of this whole story, though, is that dang dog went with us everywhere. And I can close my eyes and remember that dog sitting. And he always laid, and he was always laying down for some reason, but always laid 10 to 20 feet from us, probably. And just stand. And I just remember that so vividly. Him just laying there, just looking back and forth. And you have to wonder if there were predators there. Like, we were his sheep.
Yeah.
Which is what's cool about, I mean, livestock guardian dogs will kind of take care of whatever is in their care. But Great Pyrenees are exceptional at it just because they are so varied.
Exactly.
But that was my one livestock guardian story. But that dog was amazing.
Yeah. They make such great pets for that. If you have kids running around, like,
I mean,
they
are going to guard those. Don't send them into the woods by yourself. From the ages of 2 to 9. But.
Right. If you do.
Send them with a livestock guardian dog.
Sound parenting advice.
This is why they come to us.
The Kangal. This breed originated in Turkey, specifically the Kangal district. Again, perhaps why it's named Kangal.
They didn't get real original with these breed names.
No. So they came from the Sivas province, which is located in central Turkey. And this breed is considered by some the national dog of Turkey. Like, they made it a big thing.
I love that.
Yes. And they put it on stamps even.
Rightfully so.
And what makes these dogs unique is that there is little to no inbreeding, which in the dog world is almost unheard of. This means that Kangals have remarkable health and dispositions along with excellent lines. They're so well maintained. The government of Turkey operates their own breeding program for these dogs. They have their own kennels. They take it very seriously.
That's crazy.
So people that you know, David and Judith Nelson.
We all know them.
Two now. Americans. Yeah. If you don't remember, they imported the
Akbash
from Turkey as well. So they just love important dogs. Important.
Important.
Importing dogs.
Importing important dogs. They actually brought a lot of breeds back. It wasn't that you could do a rabbit hole in them too.
Right. Yeah. Yes. So they are two Americans who were living in Turkey for a short time and reported on the Kangal dogs and brought them to the U.S. for the first time in 1985, which began the lines in the U.S. for this breed. And in 1998, the United Kennel Club recognized them as a breed. Color is important in the Kangal breed and can have only slight variation, but overall is tan, dun, or gray with a black muzzle and black ears. White patches can only appear on the feet, chest, and chin. They are double coated as well. And their height is 30 to 32 inches for adult males and 28 to 30 inches for females. And Kangals can weigh from 110 pounds to 145 pounds for males and 90 to 120 pounds for females. They can be susceptible to hip dysplasia, and they are prone to obesity if they are not active enough. And this breed should be active. They just do better when they're active. But since they are a livestock guardian dog, they are very territorial and defensive and not good with strangers. So these LGDs do better in a pair or pack again and work best in a group in order to protect their livestock. They are known more for intimidating predators rather than fighting, but will fight off predators if threatened. And if this is a breed that interests you, you can check out Kangal Dog Club of America, and they do provide a list of breeders for each state along with information and pictures.
All right, so the Commodore, which is the mop dog.
Tell me, they're so cute.
So these dogs are so unique looking in that they have hair that is all dense white cords. They really look like a flying mop when they get going. It's pretty cool.
Wouldn't it be cool to have one and name it Mop?
Mop.
Yeah, speaking of unoriginal names for dogs.
Right.
Mop.
Mop. I love it. So these cords actually do serve a purpose beyond just looking really stinking cool. They're so thick and dense that they obviously protect against harsh weather, but also like hot and cold, which is really cool.
Yeah.
The way that they're corded, they kind of expose skin that keeps them cool. It's interesting. Right. So,
side note, but don't shave your dogs.
Don't ever shave your dogs. Please don't shave your dogs. Yeah. Sad. PSA. But the coat also protects against predators, which is like, it's kind of morbid, but like, a bite
if it
cushion.
Bites it.
A bite cushion.
Yeah.
They've got a built-in
Imagine
bite cushion.
Imagine biting
cushions.
A mop.
Right.
You can't bite a mop.
Can't
Nobody
bite
can
mops.
Bite a mop.
So the coat mats all on its own. So there's a soft undercoat, and as that grows and falls, it's trapped by the harsh, curly outer coat. And they start forming cords around 8 months, and the cords just continue to grow and like throughout the dog's life. So if you intend for this dog to be a true LGD, the cords will just do their thing. They'll be dirty. They won't be as white. Fine. Everything will take care of itself. But if you intend for this to be a house dog, their coats require quite a bit of work, which I wasn't aware of. But to keep them white and stink-free, it's kind of a hassle. So on the plus side, though, because of the way that the cords work with the undercoat shedding and trapping into the cord, they don't shed like other dogs do. So if that's important to you, that's kind of cool. They aren't an overly large dog, standing anywhere between 25 and 31 inches. But 31 inches is like kind of a rare, super tall one. They do weigh like 80 to 100 pounds. So they're pretty stout for being on the shorter end. And these dogs were obviously bred to guard stock. And they truly do best when they have something to watch and care for. So if you're not using them in the livestock capacity, that could be a child or a cat. But they really, really need that responsibility in their life.
And these kind of working dogs, if you don't give them a job, they're going to find something destructive you don't want them to do.
That's it. Yeah.
So,
and the Commodore seems to be really strong in that
department. Yeah. They're specifically bred for what they're bred for.
Right. So they do, though, when they are given the job, have a calm and steady temperament, unless they're protecting, and then they'll wreck some shit up. They actually do mean business. But they hail, the Commodore hails from Hungary, and although it's thought to be a descendant of the, I should have looked this up, Russian Outcharka? Yeah, which was brought to what is now today's Hungary. So the word Commodore can be found as early as the 16th century, but descriptions of these dogs far predates that. They were first recognized by AKC in 1937. During World War II, contact with the U.S. and Hungary was cut off, and breeding in the country was nearly down to zero. The war wiped out the breed. There was only a few dozen alive. And it kind of stayed stagnant like that until about 1960, when Hungary was able to reconnect with other countries and start importing again and breeding. Breeding picked up from there. So they're still relatively an uncommon breed in the U.S., but they do seem to be picking up in numbers. And the Commodore Club of America attributes that to the growing population of the introduction of wolves, which I thought was interesting. They were kind of the only ones that put that right out there. So more and more producers are using LGDs in general, but Commodores are definitely included. And that's something that, like, I don't know if you felt like this when you were researching. It was like, this dog's from Europe used for wolves. This dog's from Europe used for wolves. This dog's from Europe used for wolves. And it just kind of reminded me that, like, here, it's not like wolves are new, but in a lot of areas they are new.
Yeah.
If you're not from the U.S., the wolf thing is a highly debated situation. But
right. It's a hot topic.
Yeah, it really is. But anyways, it was just kind of interesting to be like, oh, yeah, Europe's been dealing with wolves this entire time. But it is interesting. It'll be interesting to see if people start using livestock guardian dogs more and more and more in the U.S. I think
that the wolves in Europe are smaller than the ones that are here.
Yeah, they're different.
So it does play a huge part in it, because the dogs, if your dog gets out and is in heat here, and it's in, I live in an area that has a lot of wolves.
Yeah.
It could be dangerous for your dog. So
totally.
It's just one of those things, like, you have to be mindful of if you live where we do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally different.
So the Anatolian Shepherd. This breed is also originating in Turkey and is said to be a cross between the larger breeds in Asia with the smaller European breeds. Have you ever seen those teddy bear type dogs in Asia? They're amazing. They're so floofy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what they're crossed with. And this totally makes sense considering Turkey is in between the two areas, and they became very popular in Turkey and Afghanistan. These dogs have somewhat shorter hair. So Anatolian Shepherds are typically fawn-colored with black ears and snouts. However, there can be quite a bit of variation, and they can still be recognized as Anatolian Shepherds. For instance, stripes, darker colors. The striped ones are so cool looking.
I haven't seen a striped one. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. Yeah, they have pictures of them. And their height can be around 27 to 29 inches at the shoulder and around 150 pounds. And these dogs are incredibly independent and loyal, and they are not great inside the house. So don't bring one in the house. They just don't like it. But if you do end up getting one, know that they are very, very hardy. Check their ears often and make sure that they have, like, good teeth. But after that, they're a bit more sensitive to anesthesia, and that's really all you have to worry about with them. Over the years, the dogs and the sheep have learned to work together so incredibly well that when a dog perceives a threat, their tail will turn up in, like, almost a circle. Have you seen that before?
Yeah.
But did you know that the sheep recognize this as a signal to get behind the dog?
I didn't realize that, but that's really stinking cool.
Yeah. They've just been bred together so long.
Yeah.
And then the sheep mamas are teaching the baby sheep that. And these dogs originated in Turkey. So when they did that, they were so valuable to the people that if someone were to kill another family's Anatolian Shepherd, they were required to pay back the family with a grain pile the length of the dog.
Naturally.
Very specific.
Naturally.
And I don't know why this tradition of a good old American competition died, but again,
we love a good old timey American competition.
Good old timey American competition. This is in the 1930s, and the U.S. government was trying to figure out, like, the best type of livestock guardian dog, because we can't have just a several average kind of livestock guardian dogs.
We have to
know what the best is. We have to have a competition. And so, unprompted, the Turkish diplomat just sent off his two best dogs in order to mate. He's like,
unprompted. It just showed up at the White House.
Right.
With a tag that says, here you go.
Breed them.
Beat them.
These are my best ones. What my favorite part is, nothing really came of this program due to, like, the war starting, right?
Yeah, busy doing other stuff.
But the U.S. was terrified of stepping on Turkey's toes and, like, just doing away with these dogs. So they auctioned off all the puppies. And in the end, someone from the Virgin Islands bought them all.
Oh, wow.
And that was like the end of that. So strange. It's so strange to me.
Right.
So that's the reason they didn't get established in the U.S. until about the 1970s, when the servicemen and women brought them back as pets in the U.S. So they imported these dogs as pets. Wow. And then ranchers caught on how good they are at protecting the livestock and decided to utilize them exactly what they were bred for. So if you're looking for a slightly smaller breed, this might be a good option for you. Note that they are said to be stubborn, but very loyal and typically very good at protecting sheep, goats, poultry, and larger livestock.
Yeah, we had some neighbors a while back that when we lived in Colorado that had two of them. And they're like super, they're super dogs. I like them.
Yeah, they're very smart.
They're very pretty too, I think.
Yes, they are.
So at the end of this, I want to wrap this up with one more important little note that I did not take notes on. So we'll wing it here. But we live in Wyoming, right? Which... make all the jokes you want. We love our sheep. So sheep are everywhere, and ranchers and producers will have like contracts with the Forest Service and stuff. So you'll be just out in the mountains and here's a whole flock of sheep, right?
Yeah.
So two things to note. First off, if you encounter a livestock guardian dog, say you're out hunting or walking or hiking or whatever, there's a very real chance that you will be a predator in that situation and that livestock guardian dog will respond as such. So yeah. Treat it like you would any other predator. Don't approach it. This is not a cute little fluffy dog. Back up slowly. Talk calmly. Don't freak out. But get out of there. It's not your space.
Yeah.
So just know that that's a possibility. Also, the other thing that happens to, like, we have some friends that this happens to all of the time. Their dogs get picked up. Like,
oh, yeah.
Out of the forest. And like, it's always this, these stories that you hear are like always this insane effort to capture this like really aggressive dog. I mean, it's just out in the forest.
Yeah.
Or like the dog will be crossing like the highway and with his flock of sheep or whatever, you know, and like people just stop and pick these dogs up.
Oh, no.
Where we live is like, I mean, we're at least 2 hours from like a moderate sized city.
Yeah.
But the number of dogs that have gotten picked up here and end up at rescues in Salt Lake City from my friend has, it's unreal. So she's like always spreading the message, like, for the love of all things holy, do not take a livestock guardian dog from the forest. They're out there for a reason, even if you don't see the sheep. Like, they're coming to make sure you stay away from the sheep.
Right.
Please don't rescue these dogs. Because a lot of times what she was saying, like, A, they can't afford to keep going down to Salt Lake City. It's like 4 hours to get these dang dogs.
Yeah.
And now at this point, they've got vet bills racked up because the people
are... They got to get checked out every single time.
And the people are like, oh my gosh, we're going to do this and we're going to do that because this poor rescue dog. And they think they're donating services or, you know what I mean, or helping this dog. And then, or they've been impounded and they've got to pay to get the dog out. But now they've had so much contact with people by the time that they get their dog back that they are now a failed livestock guardian dog. So it's like, now what are they supposed to do with this thing? Anyways, that's my little PSA. Don't get eaten by one if you're in the woods. Be smart. They're doing their job.
Right.
And secondly, don't rescue them. Lastly, I all but ordered a dog while researching this. Like, Brian came home and I was like, look, I solved two massive problems we have today.
Right.
It's like, what? What are the massive problems? And I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I have an irrational phobia of grizzly bears.
Like, you're terrified of them.
I mean, I won't walk out to my barn at dark by myself because I'm convinced I'm going to get eaten by a grizzly bear. And Brian's...
I don't think you, like, even out here, if it turned dark, you were like, I'm not walking to the truck.
You and I went to go get the... You went, like, to close the chicken coop. Remember that? We went to close the chicken coop at your house. And you closed the chicken coop. And then we're starting a conversation. So we, like, stopped. We were just standing out there by the chicken coop.
Yeah.
And I was like... Like, herd mentality. She's not freaking out. I don't need to freak out. She's not freaking out. I don't need to freak out. I'm like, can we go back to the house? Can we go back to the house? Can we go back to the house?
Yeah, you're terrified.
I'm so terrified of bears. And it's like, I mean, it's really affecting my life at this point. Like, this summer, I'm putting myself through some sort of anti-bear therapy.
Bear rehabilitation.
Rehabilitation for bear loving. Because, I have an issue with it. So, anyhow, I told Brian, he got home. I was like, solved two of our problems. I found a way to protect myself against bears, and I figured out our next breed of dog, because now we're down to one dog, right, which is weird for us. So
because we went from having four last year.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a rough year last year for dogs, but I was like, I figured out how to save myself from bears, and I figured out our next dog, so I just went ahead and ordered one.
Yeah, he would not be surprised.
Well, no, and I told him, I was like, I want this. And he's like, oh, okay. So I was like, damn, I should have just ordered it.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
what is it?
Would absolutely, and I'm seriously considering getting a Great Pyrenees.
Oh, really?
But I would use it in the capacity that we had ours as more of a family companion, family garter.
Yeah.
In that respect. So our property is, we have 23 acres, but it's kind of L-shaped. And our house is at like the top of the L, right?
Yeah.
As are all of our neighbors. So despite the fact that we have a lot of land, all of our neighbors' houses and properties are kind of shaped similar, like that long and skinny. So all of our houses are kind of quite near each other up along the road. Right. And our property is not perimeter fenced. Also, we just don't, I mean, we've got, I don't know, a handful of goats. I don't even know how many goats we have. Seven, maybe? eight? I don't know. But that's really it. So, and also we've had zero predation problems at this, knock on wood, at this point in time. So anyhow, we don't have a real need for a livestock guardian dog, as cool as they are. But because we don't have a need, what's going to happen? They're going to find something else to get into. And I don't want to open up a bunch of problems for us. So that's why we don't have one. But yeah, it was funny researching this. I'm like, this is going to be the most expensive episode we've ever done, because I'm pretty sure I'm buying a dog.
Hilarious.
Luckily, I just had a baby, so I'm going to wait a year or so, maybe two, unless I get real stupid. You guys will see. Hey, here's the thing. You'll be able to tell the state of my mental health post-birthing based on if a new dog arrives.
That's what happened to me. My son was 3 months old, and I decided, you know what? I'm going to get the breed that they tell you never to get with children.
Right.
I got a heeler when he was 3 months old. Yeah. She's been the best dog in the world. Well, so
you lucked out. I think she was just naturally probably good, and then you've done a ton of work with her too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's a great dog. So,
but what would you get?
I mean, a Commodore, would obviously. You?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That suits you.
It does.
That suits you.
I have to have something different, right?
What are the chances? Like, I think that there's probably a 90% chance we will end up with one at some point, a Great Pyrenees. What
one of us.
The chances that you will end up with a Commodore? Is this a real chance or just like, this is the one I would pick?
Right. Yeah. No, if I had more acreage, I'd definitely get one. Mm-hmm. Because we do have a lot of bird predators.
And bears. Right?
Well, the bears,
they're everywhere.
They are. We usually do see them.
Don't tell me that. I'm never coming back. The only way I'm coming is if I'm traveling with my Great Pyrenees.
Your Great Pyrenees. Yeah. No, my dog would take care of you. I trained my heeler to be a livestock guardian dog. So
she's a good girl.
I guess I really don't want or need one.
Right.
I want one, but I don't need one. If I had more property, I'd probably get one, a Commodore or two.
Yeah.
Because they do better in a pack.
They're so cool.
Yeah.
And that suits you.
I want to see everyone's livestock guardian dogs, please.
Yeah, send us pictures. We live vicariously through you until we make bad decisions. Yeah.
Maybe talk about how great they are so one of us makes a bad decision.
Mm-hmm. I'm already.
Yeah. I'm already really there. Deep. Yeah.
I just need to order one.
Order
I'm going to Amazon Prime a Great Pyrenees.
Yeah. Yep. You can do that now. It's fine. Well, this has been Milkmates.
Happy dogging. Happy guarding.
Guarding.
Happy milking.
Happy milking. Bye.